Welcome to the Industry Talks podcast. I'm your host, Roman Perry, and I'm very excited to announce that our next live webinar is taking place next week on Tuesday, May 19th. The lineup includes Hisham Dahoud, Imani Simmons, and the one and only DJ producer, Nightmare. To find out more information about how you can attend, check the link in the podcast liner notes. This week, we have the producer Exact. For those that don't know, he has production credits with Black, Party Next Door, and several with Guapdad 4000. On this episode, we talk about his journey as a producer, some of the things he learned living out of his lockout, and also a few tips for up-and-coming producers and how they can succeed both in the time of quarantine and beyond. So without further ado, here is my conversation with Exact.
Industry Talks.
Welcome to the Industry Talks podcast.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me, man. My name is Exact. I'm a producer and engineer out of the Bay Area, California, now in LA. I've done work with tons of different artists ranging from like Kelly Rowland and Jamie Foxx to Guapdad 4000, Party Next Door, Black, many rappers from the Bay Area. I also do in-house studio management for Too Short down here in LA at his facility.
Cool.
And yeah, man, just all around, you know, try to make things happen out here as well.
Yeah. So, you know. Just making music.
Making music, trying to make plays, connect dots, you know.
Sure.
I pride myself in, you know, if I can't get it done personally, I know somebody who can. And essentially all facets of the industry, making music, whether it's mixing, good. Mastering, production, singing, vocals, musicians, all that stuff. So it's been something I've been working on to you know, stay useful.
Yeah. I feel like the role of the producer is really you got to wear a lot of hats. You know, it's not really like you're just not making, like, it's not just making beats.
Well, I feel like people get that, you know, since production has become such a generalized term, I think people have kind of lost the fact that, like, the term producer doesn't even actually apply to any music making task.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, the term producer came from, like, the producer is the guy who books this, who calls all the musicians together to come help make a piece of music for an artist, or helps, you know, put together all the pieces of the puzzle, and, you know, like
even budgets it.
Yeah, budgets. I mean, that's the executive producer is the one who pays for everything. So it's like Diddy. It's funny, people used to be like, Diddy doesn't make beats, but like Diddy's the ultimate form of a producer. Diddy's like, no, I need bruh here to make this beat for Mace. And I need Mace to hop on this type of song. We're going to sample this old song. We're going to do dances in the video. And everybody going to dance to that certain dance in the club. And we're going to have a hit. And he did that for the whole 90s. You know what I'm saying? Without ever having to program a drum himself.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Whether he did or not, you know?
For sure.
So, yeah, I think that's what I've been – that's what I realized the most when I moved out to L.A. was people end up doing jobs that they weren't necessarily like trained for or had any experience in previously, just because they were able to like connect the dots. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Like it's a job in and of itself out here, being able to put pieces together for people. You know what I'm saying? So the more of that you can add to your resume on top of whatever you do creatively, the more useful and valuable you can be in as many situations as possible.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's almost like, I look to, like, even being as a producer can even be, you're almost taking on the role of a manager in some aspects too.
Yeah, you can, you know, like, you know? I've been executive producing this kid from the Bay. His name is Donnie Cupid. We've been producing his album out, and I've only produced like half of it, but I made sure to sit in on all the mixes. And, you know, until recently it was pretty much just like him, me, and this other engineer producer named DTB that is doing the project with me. It was pretty much just the three of us coming up with, you know, song concepts, video rollouts. It's all on, you know, he was coming up with a lot of the video concepts, and then just like it was on me and my bro to, you know, spitball ideas with him as far as to marketing and how to put the music out, you know. Because, yeah, ultimately I feel like producers too, unless you're coming up with an artist that's your same age.
Yeah.
You're generally probably the elder to a lot of these artists.
Yeah.
You know, or at least have been in the industry long enough to give them valuable advice.
Yeah.
And so we find ourselves, you know, kind of, I wouldn't say fully managing, but definitely I'm the creative force behind a lot of things to a certain extent. You know, if anything, just starting the idea.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Taking people under your wing a little bit.
Yeah, because ultimately it's just like I've been doing this and been around seeing what's working and what's not working. So I have at least somewhat more of an idea than they might, you know?
Yeah.
And so we do. I find myself in that position. I wouldn't say all the time, but, you know, often enough.
I was doing a little bit of research.
Okay.
And I heard when you first moved to LA, you lived in your studio for like a year.
Yeah, like 10 months, man. I moved down here with my, a little bit of backstory. When I graduated with my bachelor's in engineering up in the Bay, I started a studio in my house and I lived there with another engineer and Mr. Fab, and we just worked for like 3 years straight, just building my rep, you know, getting better at making beats, you know, getting better at engineering.
Yeah.
And Fab ended up writing a song for B.O.B. and 2 Chainz, that song Headband, okay, in like 2012 or 2000.
Yeah, I remember that one.
Yeah, so when Fab wrote the hook on that, it opened up a lot of doors for him to get writing sessions. And I was still up in the Bay, but he was going down to L.A. all the time. And I kept missing out on opportunities. He'd hit me while I was in a session and be like, hey, can you send me the vocals and the beat to this one song? And I was like missing out on opportunities for placements because I was engineering. And so, long story short, made the move down to L.A. with my roommate from the Bay. And about as soon as we moved down here, my studio plans kind of fell through.
Right.
Not to go into too much detail, but basically I had negotiated a deal to rent a room in a building and put my stuff in a producer's spare room in exchange for engineering for him. And when I moved my stuff in, he didn't give me the keys to my room.
That you're and paying said, for I can't.
Well, we were paying for one room.
Okay.
But like, we had like at least 4 conversations where I was like very much so like, yo, we're going to rent this room. We're going to put Sauce's stuff in the room we're renting. And I'm going to move my setup into your second room so that I can be in-house and engineer for you when you have sessions. And when you're not, I can work on my stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Like I went over this hella times. And so when I moved down, like he didn't tell me I couldn't get the keys till I put my stuff in the room and was leaving the day we moved to LA.
The bait and switch.
From the Bay. Yeah. Bro, crazy. So that situation fell apart after about a year, a little less than a year. Sauce ended up moving up and he's now Empire's main engineer up for Empire in the Bay. And when that happened, I had a roommate for a couple of months and then his situation kind of fucked me and he didn't pay his rent for 2 months essentially. So that kind of ate away all my savings because I had to pay for my apartment by myself for 2 months. And then I basically was forced to either give up my studio and keep my apartment that I couldn't work in or give up my apartment and move into my studio. And so I just put all my shit in storage and moved into the studio. I was managing another studio that had a shower. So it was like, it wasn't a...
Made it work.
Yeah, it wasn't like the worst thing in the world. It was not the optimal situation, but like I wasn't grody and dirty, you know what I mean? I
still had to
clean my ass. Bro, I pretty much just like lived in my studio. I know there was a brief period of time, like, me and a few of the homies were kind of just crashing in my studio and their studio and just like just working, bro, trying to put it together, trying to figure it out. That was around the same time actually that like right after that I started working for Kelly, or right before that I had been working for Kelly Rowland. That was like the first time I had been able to like save up money. And then when my roommate fucked me, it just took all my savings and kind of I had to figure it out.
Pull the rug out from under you.
Yeah, man, because like it started off with like, oh, I'm going to be a couple days late. Oh, I got you at the end of this month. And then the end of the month came and he didn't have the last month or the next month. And I was like, okay, bro, cool.
Yeah.
Well,
is there anything that you like through that experience, both just with any of that experience, what are the things that you learned from like just kind of like, because you just like lived in your space, like you were in, I feel like that 10 months, it seems like that was just, you were just making music during that 10 months.
Yeah, bro.
That was it.
During that time, I made an album with this guy, YMTK. He's one of my good friends and homies. He's also a dope writer and artist. We made this album called All the Right Places. And like, honestly, bro, being able to like live there and just be in the lab, like that was all we did for 9 months was write songs for this project, mix the project, come up with interludes. Like, so I was able to lock in, but at the same time, my studio was in a building with a bunch of other studios. So there was problems with like my neighbors and their noise bleed. And it was just like not the optimal situation to be in as far as like a studio lockout. And so, yeah, bro, I really just made it work. I think the thing I learned the most was just like working smarter, you know, and like you got to keep it real with yourself. You know, I think in the industry, there's so much like glitz and glam. It's easy for you to hype yourself up about potential opportunities, you know, but it's really important to like to meter your expectations. And not to say like you got to rain on your own parade, but like you do. I would be cautiously pessimistic rather than optimistic in your dealings. You know what I mean? I would, you know, until someone sends you a contract for something, you know what I mean? Or is like asking you for your bank account info to route some money to it. Like you really can't count on anything. And I think before that experience, I would take a lot of surface value opportunities and blow them up in my own head as like, oh, this is going to come through.
This is the break.
Yeah. And it's like, really, no, like this is a opportunity for you to potentially move forward. But an opportunity is not a sure thing. You know what I mean? It's just that you have the ability to make something happen. But, you know, at the time I didn't realize like the plethora, you know, it'd be stuff like people would hit me for beats and be like, oh, I like this one beat. Wiz is gonna cut it, and then I'd be in my head like, I got a Wiz Khalifa song, and it's like,
this is it, I got it.
It's like, no, that's not at all the case. Like Wiz hasn't even cut it yet, like they didn't even play it for him, you know what I mean? Like stuff like that. It's like you gotta really like meter yourself, like until you hear the song with the artist on it and they're trying to hit you like asking you if you have a lawyer, like don't count on that placement, you know what I mean?
Right. I feel that.
And so it's like, it's easy to get yourself in trouble, you know, you think you have 3 or 4 things coming along because you're naive to how the industry works, and then like they don't come along, and all of a sudden you've been banking on them coming along and not working hard in the meantime. And so that was really kind of how I found myself in those positions, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
just being, I wouldn't say nonchalant, but you know, just overhyping things to myself when it really wasn't all that, you know what I mean?
When it wasn't time.
Yeah, just, you know, I don't know. There's, like I said, being in LA, you're around so much success that there can be pressure to succeed and to, you know, like reassure yourself that you're on the same, like on the right page. You know what I mean? And so it's easy for you to kind of take these little things, these little bits, and blow them out of proportion to yourself if you're not careful. You know, you
gotta, these little bits too are like, that's most of the time.
Yeah, I mean, it's all the time, bro. We're constantly in contact with people who are 1 or 2 degrees away from these artists that you want to work with and stuff. So it's like the conversations are going to come up, you know, and it's not even that the people are jawsing. It's not even that they're lying or they're fabricating their situation. It's just like your comprehension of the situation that they just explained to you might not be what you think it is. You know what I mean?
Right.
Somebody who says they're good friends with an artist, that doesn't mean that they can just like play your music for them necessarily. You know what I mean? And vice versa. Someone might be able to do that and you wouldn't know it. You know what I mean? So it's like, it's really just like taking things with a grain of salt and just like staying persistent on your different avenues, you know, with communication, because that's really what it is, bro. Ultimately, all this shit is communication.
Yeah, that's a big lesson,
you know,
that we've been learning. That's like a lot of people, like, communication is like probably the number one.
Well, yeah, because, you know, but a lot, I think people get what they don't factor into communication is it's part of communication is perception. You know what I mean?
What do you mean perception?
Like, you and I could both tell each other the same word, use the same verbiage, but mean it differently. You know what I mean? Like, our intention behind those words, or how we interpret those phrases, or, you know, colloquial slang, you know what I mean? The term vibes, you know what I mean? It's like music, so much of music is unspoken, you know what I mean? So you could be trying to explain to someone what you want to hear sonically or musically, and you're using description words that to them mean something differently.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, I found this out real quickly as an engineer. People who don't know the terms for like different plugins and stuff will be like, yo, give me the echo. And you're like, the echo. And they want a reverb. You know, they don't want a delay.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They want a reverb. But to them,
that's what echo is.
Exactly. So it's like, you're telling, you know, but if I tell you I want an echo, I'm telling you to give me a delay.
Right.
You know, a quarter note delay. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, it's things like that, you know, somewhat like you hear terms in music used all the time, like warm and flat and boxy and tone, you know, nasal, but like that literally means something different to every single person.
It's so subjective. You know what I mean?
It's completely subjective. So you got to be aware of that when you communicate with people that, you know, I'll hit you in a couple of days might be like, I'm gonna hit him next week when I have time.
Right.
That person might think in 2 days from now, I'm going to get a call. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, you know, it's just things like that to keep in mind. Like, you might not be on the same page with someone as far as, you know, just the language you're using. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So you just got to be cognizant of that and just kind of not take, I think it's important to keep that aware. It helps you not take things as personally if things don't necessarily go the way you think they would or you expected them to. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Staying like stoic.
Yeah. Cause you know, it's easy when you communicate with somebody and then you still didn't like find the, you like, if you communicate with someone and you still don't get on the same page, then it's like, kind of like it's dejecting. You know what I mean? It's like, oh, damn. Like, either they don't fuck with me or, like, I'm fucking up. But, like, it could just be like, nah, like, you did your job and they didn't get it the way they wanted it. And that's just what it is. Like,
yeah. It wasn't the right fit.
Yeah. Or it was and tight. But, like, either way, it's not a personal attack against, like, you necessarily. Okay. You know?
Yeah. I feel that.
If that makes sense.
That makes sense. Definitely. No, I get that. Because you're talking about basically like really what it comes down to is just rolling with the punches, going with the flow, just kind of accept, like, just keeping your head down, working hard. And then the opportunities that come, don't bank on them until, like, literally they're in your bank.
No, like, yeah, literally, bro. Like, because there's so many, you know, like the... I always tell the story whenever people ask me about the Black record, but like, I had a song with Business Boy that was on the East Atlanta Love Letter for so long, for like 6-7 months, if not longer. And then as the album was coming down the home stretch, I found out that the song that was on there wasn't anymore. And so I wasn't going to have a cut on there. And then just like, you know, things ended up the way they did and Black cut Let Her Go as the last record for it. You know what I mean? And I was able to get back on the album. But, like, I was under the impression for almost a year that, like, I had a cut with Black about to be on the next project. And then I found out last minute, oh, no, it's not going to be on there. And I was, like, I was bummed. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's got to be, like, a gut punch, you know?
Yeah, because you're, like, gearing yourself up with excitement.
It's
and the song is tight, you know what I mean? I got to hear it. And so it's, like, stuff like that. It's, like, bro, that shit isn't personal. He wasn't, like, fuck Exact. I'm not going to put that song on my album.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like it's not, you know what I mean? I feel like it's easy to take shit personal in the music industry when a lot of the time it's not personal. Sometimes it might be, You might, and I think you'll know, I think you in, as an individual will know when someone's doing something personally to you. But right. A lot of the time, if there's any gray area, it's probably not personal, bro. Like, it's probably not. Everybody got their own agenda to a certain degree, you know?
Yeah, definitely. That's like a, there's like this like little, it's like a little like, I forget the name of the law, but it's like just like a way of like, looking at things and looking at behavior and stuff. Like, don't, what is it? Don't assume malice with what could easily be explained by, I mean, in this instance, it's don't assume malice with what could easily be explained by ineptitude. But like, in the instance of, you know, Black cutting that record that you had with Business Boy off the album, that's not due to malice. That's just like, it wasn't a good fit.
Yeah, no, like literally, you know, there was no ill intention in him taking the song. I'm like, that's, and like when you even think about it, like now saying that out loud, it's like, that's insane to think. Yeah. Like a man I've never met personally being like, ah, fuck that song because that guy produced
I
it.
I hate
like,
that you know, guy.
That did not happen. If that was the case, he would have never even cut the song.
Yeah, you know exactly.
So it's like, I think a lot of the time, yeah, it's like, you just can't assume malice because so there's so much going wrong all the time in life. You know what I mean? That like, if that's your perception, like you're just going to have a bad time all definitely. The time. You know what I mean? Like,
well, you still have that little lizard pop up in your brain that you're like, this is definitely what happened.
Yeah, no, for sure. There's definitely, I feel that always that little piece of,
the ego.
Yeah. The ego, you know? Being like, nah, that's personal. Nah, they trying to attack you. Like, and just, you know, it's important to just like, fuck that guy, bro. Like, it's hard.
Yeah,
we all have our moments. Yeah. And you're not being truthful if you don't have those moments. Because we do. We all have those moments. And it's okay. Like,
it's part of being human.
Yeah, man. Like, I think, if anything, the internet has taught us that, like, we're all dumbasses. Even the smartest people are dumbasses sometimes. So, yeah. Like, stop tripping, bro. Just, like, do your best. You know what I mean? Like, especially right now with the coronavirus and shit, bro, it's so easy to just like get this doomsday mentality. Like, oh, it's all, we're fucked. Oh, they're never, oh, it's like, I stress so much, even to myself. Like, I say it out loud because I'm constantly telling myself this, but like, you can't worry about things you can't control, especially if you're trying to be in the music industry.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or be a creative. You can only worry about the things that you have direct control over, you know what I mean? Because ultimately, bro, like, nobody has all the answers, you know? We're just trying to make the best music we can and get paid, you know?
That's
everybody
it.
In this shit is, you know what I mean? Like,
that's the business
across the industry.
Yeah.
And us creatives are competing with people who don't even make music, trying to make music, money in the music industry. So it's like, and those people are needed, but we're all taken out of the same pot. So it's just like, bro, do your best and make great music and it'll happen eventually.
Yeah. You know? Work smarter.
Work smarter. Because working hard, I feel what you said in the beginning of this. Like, I hate the productiveness porn. Like, that shit is, it's just not real.
Yeah.
You know, like, you have to be in a certain place in life to afford yourself the time to be and the ability to be constantly productive.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because the rest of us have to worry about, you know, life, you know, our family members, our relationships, you know, making money still, you know what I mean? Sometimes being productive in what you want to do isn't what makes you money right away, you know, especially when you're coming into the industry, you know what I mean? This grind, you know, that was how me and Business Boy started. Me and the homie Sapphire, we used to do this shit, Beat School. We would pull up a old school Ski Lodge studio, which is now, Dash Radio?
It was before
Dash was even a thing. It used to be DJ Ski's studio, and they did one little podcast upstairs at the Ski Lodge. And we used to just, like, lock ourselves in this little room, bro, from fucking all day, bro, 24 hours, bro. 20-hour days making beats, bro. Just as many producers could fit as chairs, you know what I mean? Just like passing a beat around all day, and it was just grind, fuck sleep. It was hash. Like, if you go back on my Twitter to like 2014, 2015, it's hella hashtag fuck sleeps.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, while that afforded me the ability to, like, hone my craft to a certain amount, like, we for sure could have been working hard, like, smarter during that time and actually, like, created more revenue for ourselves and been more productive for, like, more future endeavors versus just, like, sitting there making as many beats as we could for as much time as possible. You know what I'm saying?
Just, like, grinding.
Yeah, like, there's a big difference. You know, it's a cliche saying, but there is a big difference between being productive and being busy, you know? And being busy is trash. Like, don't just be busy for the sake of being busy. If you're busy, you should really check with yourself and make sure that you're being productive. Because if you're busy and productive, go mob, do that. But if you're just busy and you're not really being productive, like, you got to figure out a way to maximize production, because you will burn yourself out in this industry quick.
And then you're just spinning wheels.
And, like, while you're spinning wheels, someone else who's trying to get to the same place you're going to is making the wheel move forward.
Right.
You know what I mean? And so you just, like, you got to know that, like, especially now with music being on the computer, we're going to be competing, quote unquote, with, like, younger and younger people, artists and producers, you know what I mean, who grow up with this technology. You know what I mean? So it's like, you know, there's a plethora of, like, 14 and 15 year old kids making slaps right now, like slaps, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And that's my competition. I'm 31. I turned 32 this year. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so when the way you can compete with that, which you can't really directly compete, but is I can work smarter. I can use my experience to help put me in a position to where I'm not competing, you know, or I can, you know, exercise opportunities that I have that they won't have, you know what I mean? Or whatever it is, it's just more important now than ever to work smart, because it's easy to do a lot of work in a little amount of time now. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I know kids that crank out.
There's no overhead.
The overhead is one thing, a computer. You can download for free all the plugins and programs you need. You can steal them all. And then you can make 10 beats a day. You know, after fucking 5 weeks, you got 50 beats. That's 2.5 albums of shit. You know what I mean? So it's like, it's very important to, like, make sure you're being productive and not just busy. Because, like you said, bro, it's a thing culturally. Like, oh, I'm so productive. Oh, I'm so busy. Oh, I'm working. See me, I'm grinding. And it's like, you know,
what are you releasing?
What are you releasing? And just, like, are you happy?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, how's your wife? How's your girlfriend? How's your mom? Do you have friends still? Do you know? What is your social life like? Because at the end of the day, like, your Grammy's not going to hug you when you don't feel good. You know what I mean? Your Grammy's not going to call you up and check on you. Your fucking plaques aren't going to fucking look at you and be like, oh, bruh, are you doing okay? How you feeling? I know you've been down. Like, that's not fucking going to happen. Your friends are going to do that. Your family's going to do that. Your relationships that you have with real humans are going to do that. So it's like, I found myself in a period of time, especially because I moved to LA and didn't have that many friends out here, or people I knew out here, that, like, where I got, like, 10 friends out here. I have tons of people I'm cool with and, like we can go party with and stuff. But, like, ultimately, like, I have a very small friend group, and a lot of that is just because I was locked in the studio for 10 years. You know what I mean? Right. 9 years just doing this. So if you didn't do this and you didn't want to fit into this equation, I didn't make time for it or any of that shit. You know, it took me a long time. Like, I got engaged in 2018, and it took me a long time to realize that, like, your relationships outside of music are, like, that's your life. Like, this is a job and we love it, so it consumes us. But, like, ultimately, like, you still have to, like, interact with people and still have, like, you know, you want to have sex with somebody, you got to talk to her. You know what I'm saying? You can't just, like, what you go do? You just sit in your studio jacking off? Like, nah.
Just being a nerd.
Yeah, come on, bro. Like, no, like, ultimately, I don't think that's many people's goal. You know, if that's your goal, cool. But, like, that wasn't mine. And so I think it's important to, like, you got to live life. Grind. Definitely put in the work. It's not easy, but, like.
Yeah,
bro, there's so much more than just, like, being in the industry and letting it consume you. Because it does. Definitely. It's very consuming, you know?
What are the ways that you, because I think especially now too, like with coronavirus, like it's really, I've found that like, it's really hard to, for the first couple weeks since I've just been at home the whole time, I haven't been, because I teach at a music school, so I like go and teach. Okay. So, like that's part of my schedule and stuff. But just being at home all the time, it was difficult for me at first to like, be like, okay, I'm done working now. I need to like focus and do something else. And I'm wondering like, and with the music industry, that's a 24-hour a day thing.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering like, what are the ways, even pre-corona and what will be post-corona, like how do you separate that sort of 24-hour a day job to find time for yourself?
Man, honestly, I'm not even going to lie to you. I was kind of forced into that position because I moved in with my fiance.
Yeah.
So I didn't do a good job before that. I was homeless in my studio, and then when I moved out of my studio, I found a one bedroom house in Hollywood, and I turned the bedroom of the house into the studio.
And you I lived put in my, the living room.
And I put my bed. I put up a curtain that cut the living room in half.
Okay.
And I put like my bed and my dresser on one side, and the couch in the living room on the other side where the kitchen was, and I just had a studio house for 3 years or two and a half years. You know what I mean? So like, I was never really good at that until she moved in with me. And then we got a house in North Hollywood, top of 2019. But before that, bro, I was not good at it. Now that I live with her, it's like, you know, I have to respect her wishes. The studio's in the house. So it's like, I have a lot less traffic now at times. So honestly, like, you just have to make the time, you know, it's not easy. You got to make sure to find at least one interest outside of music, you know, because like I have a bunch of homies who their outside the studio shit is hooping or running or, you know, working out. You know, a lot of us play video games, 2K, Call of Duty, you know, but like finding something outside of the studio, preferably that deals with people, that is an interest of yours, is hella important. Because I know I can speak for myself and a lot of us that like music is our passion, so it's really easy to just do this all the time, all like nonstop, unhealthily nonstop even, you know. It's just like finding that, you know, even if you have to schedule time to not be in the studio, you know, do that, you know.
Yeah.
For me, I have to, you know, not even have to, I shouldn't say it like that. For me, I make sure to make time to spend time with my girl and be around and for us to do things, go on walks, go places, go out and stuff. And so her being here in my, you know, us sharing a space, that really helps a lot. Just, you know, out of necessity, I can't just go all out all the time, you know. But for those people that don't live with somebody else or don't have that other significant other or whatever, I think really just like finding interest and just making sure to like get out, get fresh air, even if it's just go on a walk. Like, you know, sitting down is almost as bad for you as smoking. So like, we just got to get up. You just got to do it. Health as well.
Stand up desk.
Hey, I think Pilo got a stand up desk, and those go crazy. If I had an extra $6,000, I would for sure cash out. The song I did just got added to Fresh Finds on Spotify.
Congratulations.
I fuck with Spotify for the most part, man.
Yeah.
Sometimes there should be missing, but you know.
Payouts would be better. Better payouts would be better.
Yeah, it would be. It would be. But yeah. I feel like I will take these payouts and have a Spotify versus higher payouts and not have a Spotify, because they do operate at a loss on a monthly or a quarterly capacity. I mean,
yeah, for sure.
It's crazy. I'm really intrigued how the industry is going to be affected by this, because I know a lot of larger artists that are like breadwinners for industries, most of their bread comes from touring. And so I'm not excited for some conversations that I'm going to have, I feel like, in the near future, because I don't know, bro. I feel like if touring doesn't start again till 2021, no, there's not a company alive that was prepared to shut down in March till 2021.
Yeah, this is like the full, especially to shut down for a full summer, which is like, that's like a breadwinner season.
That's the money season. Festive right. season, like, that shit started, what, the 4th of, starts in April and goes all the way till fucking November.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, bro, I can't, I'm trying not to think about it. I'm just keeping an open mind. I'm like, they're going to have the money. They have to have the money. Because if the music stops, we're all fucked.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I don't want to think about it. I'm trying to maintain positivity through this whole scenario.
Definitely. I mean, I look at it like sort of like when file sharing got really big and suddenly record sales just plunged because of it.
Yeah.
You know, like whether that was like, like, I mean, file sharing was entirely something that was created, and it was just like, but it was just that this is now the new normal with the industry.
Yeah.
And I think too, it's like over the past, since then, and since the music industry had started restructuring itself around touring more, now it's like, okay, well, now you got to shift again.
Now the whole ever elusive, let's figure out how to make the most money off streaming is back to the forefront because that's the only fucking source you have now.
Right.
It's scary because honestly, streaming, like if you look at it from just like a business operation sense, there's so many working pieces involved in streaming revenue and its collection and where the money comes. Like, there's so much going on. Like, that shit is scary because there's almost every facet of it is a non-essential business.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, yeah. Like, worldwide. You know, I mean, shit, top of the month, ASCAP sent us all emails saying they weren't going to give us our royalties for this quarter until tomorrow instead of the beginning of the month because the people they collect from were asking them if they could not pay them.
Yeah.
And ASCAP's like, nah, bro, like, we need to collect all this because we have to pay out. You know what I mean? And so it's like, that's happening throughout the industry across all facets of revenue collection.
Yeah. You know?
So...
Well, it's just like this whole system. I mean, even it's like, it's just literally, it's weird because it's just this whole, I mean, we're not going to get into like a whole economics conversation too deep,
right?
But it's like this whole chain of economics of everybody owing everybody money. And then suddenly it's like, as soon as it's, well, we got to stop. There's some people that can't participate in the economy anymore. And it's just like, now it's like.
That's what kills me about this is like ultimately, bro, if we want to like really break it down from a meta perspective, all this shit is made up. So if we all have to be on pause, there's literally no reason why it can't all just stop until we can go back.
Yeah.
Like literally, like, cause like if I can't pay my rent and my landlord can't pay the rent for this house, you know what I'm saying?
Pay the mortgage.
Can't pay the rent for her, or pay, yeah. She can't pay the mortgage. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The bank can't collect the mortgage, so now the bank is going to default on their properties or their, like what's going to happen? So all of a sudden, everyone's going to be homeless. There's going to be no banks. And like, bro, no. There's literally no reason why you can't just be like, press the pause button.
Be fine.
Okay, cool. Like, dock a month. Like, there's no reason that, like, just everything can't be stopped.
Yeah.
And the only reason it won't is because there's, like, 150 people who are like the wealthiest of them all, and they're the only ones who are going to get hit by that stop.
Right.
And they're not even going to be broke after it, but they don't want it to happen. And it's just like, fuck y'all.
Yeah, I feel
that. We're trying to make it through coronavirus.
Yeah, I feel that. I definitely feel that energy. So I want to shift gears a little bit.
Okay.
I'm curious what... your like production workflow is like if you're going to sit down, if you have any sort of like routine, daily routine when it comes to making music, and then also to a workflow that you might have just whenever you're making a new song, like what do you reach for first?
Man, kind of
the question.
For me, my kind of workflow is I'll usually, you know, whenever I'm feeling creative, come in the lab, roll up some weed, chill out, go through some stuff that I've made recently. It really depends, bro. I've been kind of like trying not to be too, what is that, routined in my approach, just because like I'm stuck in the house and I've had a home studio for pretty much like my whole life. So it's really easy to get like stagnant at home, if that makes sense. So like,
you get the Groundhog Day effect.
Yeah, bro. Like I ain't gonna lie. I do not like making music in my home studio by myself anymore. You know what I mean? I do it still cause I have to, but like, if I'm at home, I want to have an artist here with me working on something for them. That's what, it helps me keep creative. I just, you know, I've had the same baffles up in a similar position in every fucking studio I've ever had. This is like, a lot of these are my same elements from my very first studio. So it's just like, I've gotten, I think, tired of the space. I know a lot of people who have home studios, they'll like rearrange it every few months just to keep the space fresh.
Yeah.
So for me, I kind of just like, I'll get in my routine of, you know, I'll smoke some weed. And then I really, whenever it comes to making beats, regardless of where I'm at, I'll go melody first. You know, I try to figure out the melody and the arrangement and try and like hear if I can hear a song around, you know, the music. Right. And then after I have like a solid foundation, even if it's just a chord progression or whatever it is, whenever I have a foundation of a melody that I like, that's when I'll go in and start adding the drums. And honestly, I do my drums backwards than a lot of producers, I think. A lot of people start with like the kick and the snare, but like I'll do all my percussion and all my hats first.
Interesting.
Kind of create the rhythm and the flow and the bounce. And then you just fill it in with the snare and the kick in the places that, you know, kind of accentuate the bounce, so to speak. You know, instead of, you know, locking in a kick and snare pattern, and then, you know, you got to create a bounce around that. You know what I mean? So I'll do that. And then after I have my drums done, I'll go find the bass elements that kind of round everything out, you know, and the little added sparkles or whatever else it needs. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So you're kind of almost like doing it from a top down.
Yeah. Like I grew up, as a kid, like in choir and stuff.
Yeah.
And like, I can't sing well, but I can top line and I have a good ear for like top lining. So I try and come up with a song. Like if I'm making a beat, I try and do melodies that I could hear a good top line on.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And then fill it in around that so that, when it gets to an artist or a writer, there's space for them to do their thing and create. You know, it's easy to overproduce songs and leave it, you know, when you're dealing, when you do it's, and also that's something I learned being in LA too, not working with just rappers. Cause when I first started producing, I was just working with rappers, and you can give rappers busy beats. Cause a lot of, you know, this was before autotune being hell of popular, being the norm, you know, when you just rap in bars and you're not being melodic, you need the melodies of the beats to be doing the top lines and all the other things. Cause you're not doing any sort of melody to, you know, go with the music of the beat.
Right.
Verbally, or vocally, I mean. And so nowadays with autotune being so prevalent in the normal rap style, and even if it's not autotune, just like the melodic rap thing being just the normal, I do a lot less like top line melodies in my beats until the song is done. And then in post-production, if it needs it, you can add it.
Find out what fits.
Yeah. Cause sometimes I know a lot of I've done a ton of writing sessions with a lot of big writers, and a lot of them don't want top line melodies, as an instrument until they come up with the top line. Cause then you just get locked into the top line in the beat. And if that's not a super dope top line, then it's just a mediocre song. You know what I mean? So I've kind of learned from that, and just like listening to writers when I'm engineering writing sessions and stuff, leaving things more open and like waiting to complete the beat till you have a song. You know what I mean?
I feel that. Yeah. I think there's a tendency, this is something that I, took me a while to learn. There's a tendency to like you said, overproduce, like having my kick and my bass do too much.
Yeah.
You know, like I'll be all over the place with my bass trying to have like this insane bass line when I'm only dealing with like my kick, my snare, and my bass, instead of being like, okay, cool, this is a good foundation. I have room to add to this.
Yeah, man. I think what helped me a lot was going and listening to like songs that I like and dissecting them. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like the song, and not just like the song you've heard that you like the song that like when you want to listen to a song, you like one of the ones you just, I'm gonna put this on, you know what I mean? And listen to it and really like try your best to break down the beat around the song and what's going on. And I think more times than not, you find out it's not a lot going on. You know what I mean? Like I was the same way. I used to go crazy with my 808s, hella bends, hella notes. You know what I mean? Like crazy shit, bro. Like, and it's like, I'm not making dubstep.
Right.
Or trap. You know what I mean? Like nobody can rap over this because there's so much going on. It's like, there's no space for the lyricist. So it's, I think part of being a producer is understanding where you want the artist to fit into your beats and how to give them space to do so, you know?
Is that something that comes with time, do you think?
Yeah, I think so. And, or, I mean, honestly, time, but more experience. You know, I've been blessed being a good engineer, being in-house with cats like Tank, you know, Kelly Rowland, Jimmy Fox. When I was with Kelly Rowland, she was having the top of the top, you know, vocal producers come in, work with her, you know, people that worked with Babyface, you know, cats like JQ and, you know, the whole, the underdogs vocal producing team, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
And I was able to learn, you know, just sitting in the room with them, doing what they're telling me to do and why, you know what I mean? Like, I was able to learn, you know, so much from these people about their songwriting process, you know, which is important to at least keep in mind as a producer, because ultimately if you want a person to get on your, make songs to your beats, you need to understand how they're going to go about it and what they're looking for in a beat to make a song with, you know?
Yeah.
And so for me, at least personally, that was something that really helped me a lot, you know, being in that R&B sphere around like real songwriters that are like credited, acclaimed, you know, like I know I can trust what you're saying. And then like in the session you say to do something and I'm hearing how good it actually sounds. You know what I mean? Like, I think a lot of music is experience. You know, it's, we can all, you know, you could watch a YouTube video that tells you how to, you know, do a little mix trick or a production trick, but until you employ it and you really like see it working and understand why it works, it's difficult to continuously employ those different like tips and tricks. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like engineering. I also think too, just like by engineering and being in those rooms, like you're not, they're not relying on you for, you know, like if you're a kid, that's just an engineer, you're not being relied on to like make the beat or to write the song. Exactly. It's just like, can you set up the microphone? Can you comp the vocal? Can you throw auto tune and a compressor on it so it sounds good as a demo? Like that's what they're relying you on. And that those types of skills like aren't the hardest to learn. So if you can, if you want to be a producer, I could see a path where like getting into those spaces where you are working with these songwriters and producers can really be a foundation.
You know, I battle with it all the time because I'm good at both, you know?
Yeah.
And a lot of the time people want to employ that phrase, master or, what is it? Good at a few, master at none, master at none, or whatever it is. And it's like, that's just not the case. I'm good
at both.
Jack
of all trades, master of none.
Yeah. Exactly. Jack of all trades, master of none. But it's like, nah, bro, like I can mix your whole album or I can produce it. Or I can produce it and mix it. But a lot of the time you get stuck with these people who are like, oh, you're a producer and an engineer. I don't want to hear your beats or your mixes. And it's like, okay, bro, like get fucked then. Like,
Are you going to work with Mike Dean?
Yeah. Like, you know, like, have you heard of a Travis Scott album at all? Have you heard any of Ye's last three albums?
Right.
Like, I don't know what you're talking about, but sure. Cool. Like, you know?
Yeah. And also too, I think, by diversifying your skill set, you're only increasing your opportunity.
Well, yeah, I know tons of engineers who are the same as myself, who have gotten in engineering with an artist, got them to listen to their beat. I mean, shit, that's how I got in with Fab, you know? I tweeted Fab one day when I had time at my school's studio and was like, he was on Twitter, like, who got a lab? And I tweeted him, I hit him in the DM, like, bro, I got a lab, pull up. You've met me before one time. And he pulled up and he needed an engineer. So we started mobbing. And then I started playing my beats, and, you know, a year later, I did 3 fucking hip-hop albums for him, co-produced 3 more albums with him. Like, that was exactly my progression into how I got into the industry, was engineering first, building that rapport, and then being like, oh, you're tight, you know? Because ultimately, bro, if you're tight and you build a rapport with people, you'll get work done, you know? Because people want to work with who they are comfortable with and who they like. Because this ultimately, like, music is a lifetime thing. If you make a song with somebody and it comes out, you're getting money from that, like, with them forever, you know? Yeah. So if they have to pay you or someone else is paying you, regardless, like, that's forever. It's in perpetuity. Bro. These don't go away, you know?
It's still going on your discography.
Yeah, like, you gotta... So it's important to, like, have a good relationship with the people you work with, because you're gonna be, you know, if a relationship goes sour, you're gonna get pissed off every time you see their name on one of your checks every quarter, you know?
Right, and there, that too, that song can end up being your... Like, that could be the song that puts your kids through college.
And that's the thing about this. More than ever, you never know. You never know what is going to be that hit, you know?
Yeah.
Like, there used to be somewhat of a formula, you know, with the radio being so crucial. There used to be like, oh, you throw this amount of money on it and take it to radio, and if it's a decent record, it'll do X amount of spins. But now with, like, the kids deciding what happens and what doesn't happen, and TikTok viral fame deciding who gets record deals and shit, like, this shit is up for grabs, bro. Just make music you like and try and give it the best shot. Put it in front of the most people you can as you know, that are at your disposal. Because ultimately, this shit is random, bro. Like Bobby Shmurda, I always go back to, is a perfect example. Like, bro didn't get popping for his song. Like, if you really think back to why he got popping, his video went viral with throwing the hat, and the hat never comes back into frame. So the hat just disappeared. So that clip of the video went viral, and they were juxtaposing that video on, like, 90s songs and jazz music, and, like, that clip went viral. And then people were like, wait, but what song is this? And then they were like, oh, I fuck with this. You know what I mean? But, like, nobody, that shit didn't go viral because they didn't go viral because the song was tight. You know, the song went up because the video of it went viral. You know what I'm saying? And so that's just kind of been the format since then. You know, shit goes viral, and then people start listening to the songs.
Yeah.
It's what it is. It's just, that's where we are at right now.
And it's in your best interest to just put out as much shit as you can, because one of those things might end up being the thing that gets your entire library heard.
Or none of it does, and you just have 1,000 songs that make $200 every fucking quarter.
Yeah.
Or, you know what I mean? Like, that's a pretty good fucking check if you do the math.
Yeah.
You have 1,000 songs, or I mean, $200 a year. You have 1,000 songs that do $200 a year. You just made fucking $20,000.
Yeah. Not bad. That pays a lot of your bills.
That's a nice chunk of, like, there's people who work day jobs all year and don't make $20,000 a year. You know what I mean? So, like, yeah, bro, like, just put out music. Like, put it out. Because ultimately, sitting on it isn't going to help you.
For sure. Do you have any other note? Because we're about 10:59, so we got to wrap up pretty soon. Okay. Do you have any other notes for, like, because we talked about these kids starting up. Like, I teach at this music production school. And some of my students are, like, they're all post high school. So, like, my students are between, like, youngest ones are, like, 18 to, like, 25 usually. Yeah. But some of the kids who are, like, 19 are absolute monsters. You know, like, I barely knew how to use Ableton when I was 19. Absolute monsters. So, like, I'm wondering if you have any notes. Thank you so much for the wisdom that you've shared so far. But I'm wondering if you have any other notes for any producers that are trying to break into the scene right now.
Oh, man, bro. You know, that is something that's so difficult. I would say start locally.
Okay.
Find artists in your area that you can actually reach out to, and, you know, ultimately, bro, a lot of it is just, like, having the courage and the self-confidence to blindly cold call these people. Don't harass people, but, you know, you got to reach out. You know, if you don't have a relationship with somebody you know that knows them, and you can't put it together in person, then you gotta go cold and just be respectful and reach out. You know, there's a few different sample producers that I work with who are young kids who have just, like, slid in my DM on Instagram, and, you know, I listened to their shit and it was tight. And now they send me samples and stuff. So it's like, you know, stuff like that. Collabing with other big producers as well is another thing. You know, if you're dope and you want to collab with somebody, like, reach out to them, send them some loops, or, you know what I mean? Whatever it is. But I think really it's just that getting over that, that like self-assurance and the self-confidence to be shameless with yourself. Cause ultimately, like, you got to put yourself on, you know, you got to reach out. No one's going to like do that for you, you know, cause it's just not going to happen. No one's going to just, oh yeah, you make, you know, and on the rare occasion, somebody does say, oh, you make beats, I know, blah, blah, blah. Like, send them beats. You know what I mean? Don't be worried about people stealing your shit so much.
Yeah.
At first, like, just get songs out.
Or even being worried about if you're good enough or not. Still, put them out.
Put them out, bruh, and get better. Yeah, because the more people see your name and the more, like, someone can look you up and see you have put, you've done stuff, the more likely they are to fuck with you if they don't know you.
I feel that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Final question for the day. I'm looking at your room. It looks dark. Final question for the day.
There's no windows in here. So
no windows in there. Okay. The cave is, what software are you on? Are you on Fruity Loops? Are you on Ableton?
And I am the last of the Mohicans on Logic.
Oh, wow.
Pro X. I'm going to be switching to Fruity Loops soon just because they have just a better sound engine. Just slap harder on Fruity Loops.
Interesting. I feel like most people, when they switch, not most people, and I'm also biased because I'm around a lot of electronic producers and stuff, but when a lot of people switch, they switch to Ableton.
Ableton is really dope for, like, music creation, like sample.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Sample, tweaking samples, making beats.
Processing stuff.
Just making music. I hate doing drums in Ableton. I can't do drums in Ableton.
Really?
Like, the worst. I can't get my mixes in Ableton to sound good. I just hate the way they have their shit set up. Like,
just, like, lay it out.
Yeah, just the routing of things doesn't really make sense to me. And there's just things you can't do mix-wise in Ableton easily that I'd like doing in every other program better.
Interesting. Like busing and stuff like that?
Yeah, like busing is super hard. Group auxing is super hard. You know, like routing multiple tracks through one bus can be difficult to do sometimes. Like,
yeah, the way they do their sends, I'm not a fan of the way they do their sends in Ableton.
Between the way they do their sends and like their bus routing and things, the way the processing is applied to those, I hate it. So I can't do it. But I know a lot of people that are like, they'll make their melodies in Ableton and then make the beat in Fruity Loops. Because Fruity Loops sound engine is better. Like, a lot of people don't know this, but like Fruity Loops dedicated a certain amount of bit depth to frequencies below like 250 or something. Or 200. Right. So like literally there's more bass. You know what I mean? Like it's just like data wise on a bass level, they have more room for your shit to punch and like more room for transients. And it's a true 64 bit.
Right.
So it gives you a true 32 bit audio file.
Yeah.
Whereas a lot of shit on Mac, Logic, and I think Ableton is 64 bit now too, but at least Logic is still a 32-bit float, fake 64-bit system.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So just Fruity Loops' bounce engine is just better for, like, urban music because it just slaps way
I feel that. I get that. I've never had that perspective about FL. Because normally when people are talking about, like, the sound of a DAW, like, it's like, okay, Pro Tools. Like, I mix in Pro Tools all the time.
Yeah. Pro Tools is definitely
routing for mixing and stuff like that in Pro Tools.
I couldn't mix in anything else. Pro Tools is this for sure the standard for mixing.
Yeah, mixing and tracking in Pro Tools for me is like
that's what I do, and then producing Logic. Yep, and then I can get my way around Fruity Loops, but I haven't made the switch yet. But I will. Everybody I produce with that was on Logic is now on Fruity Loops. So it's kind of
gotta download it and poke around.
It's worth it, man. Like, that shit slaps, bro. It sounds good. Music doesn't sound as good, but like bass and kicks and snares, like that shit. Soft clipper in there.
All right, I gotta check that out, man.
Yeah, man.
Thanks for sitting down with me on Zoom.
Of course, bro. I appreciate you.
This was great. How can people find you?
Everywhere on Instagram or Twitter at exactxl, E-K-Z-A-K-T-X-L.
Cool.
And, yeah, man.
Cool. Facebook, I'll put that in the liner notes.
Yep.
Awesome. Thanks so much.
Appreciate you, man.
Yeah.
Have the rest of your day.
I will. You too. This podcast is brought to you by the Industry Talks Music Network. The theme song and podcast editing is by me, Roman Perry. Our cover artwork is by our creative director, Danny Klein. Our background music is by Patrick Zappia. Our outreach specialist is Eleni Rodriguez. And our producer is Kyle Emerson Brown. We'd like to thank the rest of the Industry Talks team, including Jen Ortega, Dylan Moore, and Alex Norichea. We'd also like to thank Guitar Center for providing the podcast equipment that allows the show to sound so, so amazing. If you like what you heard, we ask that you please leave us a 5-star review, tell your friends about us, and subscribe. We are available on all major podcasting platforms. Thanks for listening.